Our aim really in this course is to simply be aware more often. And there is no sort of, you know, we don't need to quantify this anyway, in any way, but we just want to learn to be able to settle into presence a little bit more naturally, to make this something that is a little bit more normal for us, right? And we want to step out of our autopilot mode. And we talked about that last week, that we live, you know, a lot of our daily life with the activities within it in an automatic mode, this default mode network in the brain being activated. And often our minds are really busy with thoughts, and many of these thoughts will be unconnected to the present moment, as we've already seen. And some of those thoughts are completely random, they just pop up. And some of them are to do with stuff that is, you know, maybe more persistent in our mind. We tend to go into the past, we tend to go into the future. We're sort of forever planning and remembering and worrying and ruminating. And then we also have a real tendency to judge our experience all the time. And, you know, mostly looking for negative stuff in our environment or in our own way of thinking. Or we're making assumptions and interpretations, or we're telling ourselves stories about what is actually happening, probably fueled by those assumptions and interpretations. So one of my teacher, he calls these stories convenient fictions. So this is basically what they are. This is what our thoughts are. They're just fiction, you know, convenient in some way, and it's certainly useful to remember things and to plan things. It's necessary for life. But it is not always based in reality. It's not really often the real objective truth, let's say. So these thinking patterns arise because our perception will automatically employ biases and filters. This is just how perception works. And I just want to go into that a little bit more. Perception is essentially an active process of selecting information from our environment and then organizing it and interpreting it. So there are a few really relevant clues here. So this is certainly not unbiased, and it's not objective, and it's not really actually true. It's just what we think is true. It's selective, it's structured by ourselves, and it's interpreted. And it's all relative. So if I asked you what you noticed when you came into the studio earlier, you would all tell me a different story. And this is what you noticed. This is your reality. But this is not the truth. This is not an objective reality. It's just your perception. And that's absolutely fine. And so it's relative, it's selective, and it's also bound by illusions. So you can probably all imagine optical illusions, where we really think, you know, that these optical illusions where you have squares with different shades of gray, and you think that gray is definitely darker than the other gray. And then when you look at it, they're exactly the same shade. This is how our perception works. So essentially, our perception is shaped by what we've experienced in the past and our memories of that, what we know now, what was normal, where we grew up, you know, our sort of cultural context, the society we grew up in, and what is normal for us now. And then, of course, our emotions. And emotions can really add a fair amount of distortion to our experience. And our motivation, what do we want to happen? That will really make a difference. And our expectations. So with expectations, we tend to notice and also remember things more when they're consistent with what we're expecting. And if there is a choice, if there is some ambiguous information, we will go with we will sort of interpret it in a way that, again, is consistent with our expectation. So when those expectations are shaped by a self-critical view of ourselves, or maybe skewed moral views and opinions, or maybe past trauma, you can see how that's going to cause a problem, right? I mean, that's going to cause some difficulty. And this may then all well be our felt reality, but it's not objectively true. And we can start to see that this is how things are playing out before we can maybe change it. Changing it is a very long process and may not even be possible, but just to know that, okay, actually, you know, to cognitively understand this is how it works. It's not bad. This is just how it works. And there are good reasons for it to work like this. Then we have just a wider perspective. And really, this is what mindfulness does. It adds this slightly wider perspective so that we can realize that a lot of our thoughts are fueled by these filters and biases that we apply. And then that creates mental habits that we tend to fall back on regularly. And cognition and emotions both have a large part in that. So cognition is the experience of the external world through the senses and how we form understanding around it, and physical sensations fall into that. And then emotions are feelings that, or include feelings, I should say, they are more sort of internally oriented. They have a sort of inward-looking perspective. And they can be instinctual. So there's no control over this. It just sort of comes up. It's sort of really deeply rooted, but it can also be learned. And complex emotions like guilt or shame or blaming ourselves or others or regret, they're not actually innate. They're learned behaviors. So there's a lot of stuff happening at once, and essentially all of that is pretty much out of our control, right? So it's useful to know and to deliberately notice that stuff is out of our control. We have no idea what we're going to think next, for example. It's just, you know, we don't know that. We may think we know, but actually we don't. And there's often a real lack of clarity around perception. And this is why, you know, in the old wisdom traditions, what is always highlighted as underlying all our stress, all our suffering, is ignorance, right? So that inability to see things clearly, that inability to see things how they are, or maybe an unwillingness to see things how they are, which is a little bit different, right? So there's this analogy, and it fits more into a sort of slightly different context, I guess, but you can understand what I mean, where there is, you know, it's dark, it's night, and you see something coiled up in the corner of a courtyard or something like that, and you're like, oh my God, there's a snake there, you know, and you panic. And then someone comes and shines a light on it, and it's just a rope curled up there. So these sort of things happen for us all the time, maybe not on quite such a drastic level, but on a sort of, you know, mild level to medium level, they happen all the time. So there's a lot of misunderstanding. And there is also often fear and reactivity caused by our emotional life and our mental state. So mental states, which include thoughts and also include emotions and feelings, are shaped by our thinking about past events. And these are a memory, yeah? When we think about the past, it's a memory. It's not actually true. It's not objective. It's interpreted already by context, by our perception, by our filters. Or we think about the future, and there can often be some worry around that, some anxiety around that. And it's useful to sort of just come back to the fact that all of this is outside of our control and therefore not really worth spending so much time with. Whereas here, in this present moment, this is where we have some control. This is where we can shape things a little bit more actively. And of course, this whole sort of future and past, this mental time travel, is really useful. But I really like the way that Craig Hassett summarizes it. He's a mindfulness teacher, senior lecturer at a university in Australia, and a psychologist. And he says, a human mind is a wandering mind, and a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. The ability to think about about what is not happening is a cognitive achievement that comes at an emotional cost. So the ability to think about what's not happening is a cognitive achievement. It's great, useful, but it comes at an emotional cost. And I think this is really a very good summary. So as we can see that the past is just a memory, the future is just a projection, and the future is entirely uncertain, we have no idea what's going to happen, then the question is it really worth taking everything so personally? Do we really need to take everything on as this is mine, this is my problem, this is, you know, I should deal with this differently, or whatever it may be, taking it so personally? Because all mental states, at the end of the day, they're just phenomena that come and go. They arise and they pass. They're bound by uncertainty. And they're not really who we are. So John Kabat-Zinn, who I mentioned last week as a sort of founding father of the mindfulness-based stress reduction programs, and you'll be aware of that, he says, if you want to reduce the stress in your life, be aware of how much you take personally from the things that aren't personal. We make them personal because we have a story about them, whereas actually it may just be certain conditions, life playing itself out. So that's really all there is. So we can start to sort of step away from these stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, those convenient fictions that are constantly shifting and changing anyway, and often they're actually not very kind, and this is also a problem. The way we have our sort of inner self-talk is often fueled by self-criticism and judgment, and there is a lot of doubt and maybe fear, rumination. And that can then lead into anxiety and depression when it becomes sort of really dominant in our life. And that can happen quite easily. So a key aspect of mindfulness is, on the one hand, to have a little bit of a broader perspective and to just accept things as they are. And this is okay. So we're letting things be. And we're stepping away from a mode where we have to do stuff all the time to a mode where we can just be, yeah, from doing to being. And this is sort of really quite important. And there is a sense that, okay, right now this is how they are, how things are, and just allowing that to be as it is and just to accept that. So acceptance is a really important aspect. And just also realizing that because things are the way they are right now doesn't mean they're going to be like this forever. Doesn't mean that they're never going to change. It's just right now, this is how it is. That's all. And this acceptance doesn't mean that we're condoning in any way a difficult situation, or we step away from dealing with it or doing something about it. This is, of course, very important. So to, again, make that differentiation, there is stuff that we're being with, and then there's also stuff that we're working with. And both can be part of a practice. So some stuff we need to use the working with mode more, and some stuff we need to use the being with mode a little bit more. And then the other thing that comes into this is, how are we relating to stuff that comes up? What is our attitude around it? And with mindfulness over time, we learn to cultivate an attitude that brings in qualities maybe gratitude, non-judgment, kindness towards ourselves, the way we talk about ourselves, the way we see ourselves. And when we're working with our attitude, that gives us choice. It gives us the choice to step away from reacting impulsively to situations when they come up, and it gives us a little bit more space to respond a little bit more skillfully. And that responding versus reacting, that could be maybe seen as there just being a little bit more, you know, physically, a little bit more space, maybe a little pause around that, and that can be really useful. So there is a sort of shift in perception, away from the biases and the filters and the distortions and the sort of blame and guilt and fear and anxiety we're experiencing, and toward being with, acceptance, and working with, and change in attitude, so that there is choice and we have more of a sense of agency around our life. And that can be pretty powerful. And like everything, it's not going to happen just like that. It needs cultivation. So I like the word cultivation. So it needs repetition over a longer period of time so that that can become a new habit, so that we can come back to it a little bit more easily. If something is a habit, it sort of switches on much more immediately.